Good afternoon, gentlemen. I know it's a hard time having the first session after the lunch break, but I hope you are not too tired, and I hope you are still interested in what we have to talk about. Today, I'm talking about the analytic platform system. It's an overview session. It's a shortcut of analytic platform system is APS. You might have read something in the news about that. And actually, it's just an overview session. Tomorrow at about lunchtime, we have a deep dive session where we get much deeper. And on Friday, we have another session about Polybase, which is also related to the APS system. My name is Franz Robella. I'm from Microsoft, and I work in the Analytic Platform Center of Excellence, and I'm reporting into the Microsoft Corporate Headquarters in Redmond directly. So if people are interested, we can get in contact later on. Now, the first couple of slides are a little bit of marketing information. This is why, actually explaining why we talk about the APS and what is behind that. Actually, some analysis had been done, and data does explode. Usually, Gartner researched that usually we see a 10 times increase every 5 years in data, which companies need to manage. And also, in the last couple of years, the devices popped up all over the places, and people want to use their devices within a company for professional use, and they want to get their daily work done over these devices. And the statistics says we have up to 4.3 devices per person. That means compared to what IT people need to manage in the past about computers, it's much, much more now. And so we need to find additional possibilities to deal with that data. And on the other side, we have the world of big data and data warehouse, and the question is that just another hype, or is this something which will last? Actually, data warehousing has reached the most significant tipping point since the interception, and the thing is, we need to manage more and more data because we have no new questions which needs to be answered by the company or by the business department every day. Actually, I don't know if you might have realized that, but for example, the first question is always, you know, what is talked about our company, ourselves in social medias? Why is that question interesting? Because these days, people don't complain anymore. They don't call a company just to complain about their products. So they have given that up. If you are happy, they post something on Twitter about what they think about your products. And that actually is the reason why you want to find out what was put on these social medias. So also the culture of people changed. And therefore, we need new capabilities. Also, another question is about live data feeds. One of the examples is traffic information. I just worked earlier this year with a company, with a transportation company, which uses weather and traffic jam information to reroute their trucks just to optimize the routes and to forecast when a parcel will arrive at a customer site. So this is something which makes them different from the competition, and therefore it is interesting to them. Another thing is about prediction of something which is happening. One of the interesting parts is predictive analytics about failures of something or any kind of prediction. Business outcome, banks do risk analysis over the analytic engines, and so they need to consume a lot of data, and they also produce a lot of data. Now we talked a little bit about big data. However, big data, the hype is now probably about 15 years old, but the last 3 or 4 years, another term appeared. Actually, the discussion came from is now moving from big data to the Internet of Things. You might have heard yesterday afternoon had been a couple of presentations about Internet of Things and what you can do with that. And actually, I asked myself why do we care about that? What is the difference? And I found a definition in the internet which actually defines what Internet of Things are. And the interesting part is, compared to big data, Internet of Things, they say it's a scenario in which objects, animals, and people are provided with unique identifiers and the ability to transfer data over network without human intervention, more or less. And actually, that means this is, from the point of big data, the identifiable information and information you know you might be interested about it. So actually, this is something you can pick up. This is something you know you want to know. You can filter about that and just extract stuff which fits to that definition, get to into a database, and do some work with it. So actually, this is the Internet of Things thing is what makes the world of big data interesting for your corporation or for a customer or for people who do some advanced analytics or want to do something with that data. Now the question is, how does this kind of data impact the traditional data warehouse stack? Usually, before that, you always had data sources like OLTP systems, CRM system, and the like. You used ETL processes. You did feed the stuff into a data warehouse, which you have defined. You do well know how this is shaped, how the tables are designed, and stuff like that. You have a particular schema. And then you use BI and analytics tool to access this information to do some analytics about it. However, this changed now a little bit. You got more and more data. I just said the volume increases 10 times every 5 years. Maybe the last 2 years it increased even more for quite a few companies. The next thing is real-time data. Analytic people want to know real-time data. If you collect sensor data for a failure detection or failure prediction, then you actually want to use the data which was just produced. Or another area where you want to have real-time data is some web services which are exposed to the internet usually have log information. Then you want to do in real-time analysis if you are attacked by a virus or by malware or whatsoever. So you want to pick up unusual access patterns. So you need to have more real-time data. In old times, in traditional data warehousing, usually it's good enough to load during the night the information from last day, and then you have all day to do some work with that. This is not the case anymore. This picture changed. Also, you have new data sources and types, like sensor data, social media data, web data, device data. This usually comes in the form which is not so easily consumable by a traditional two-dimensional table structure. The next thing is you have data which is cloud-borne, which is shown on the right-hand side, and you have data coming from the traditional server systems like your OLTP system, which shows the left-hand side of the picture. And you all need to convert that into a large data warehouse. So actually that means because the picture changed, the systems you are working with and do this kind of work need to change too. Microsoft has a data warehouse vision, which says, okay, make SQL Server the fastest and most affordable database for customers of all sizes. That means for its massive scalability at a low cost, flexibility in the choice, and a complete data warehouse solution. Actually, this is all together should simplify the data warehouse management. We will not go too much into these marketing slides. We will focus on the technology, but this is why we have to talk about new systems, which is the chapter of this talk. You might have seen that too. Actually, this is another vision of the modern data warehouse stack. This is now in comparison to the traditional stack, which I just showed you. It has all kind of data sources, relational, non-relational, and a lot of data. You have on top streaming data, internal and external data. You need to enrich this data and federate it. Actually, you do master data management and data quality stuff. And then, of course, you have BI and analytics engine, which you have a predictive analytic engine these days. You want to expose the results on the mobile devices and stuff like that. You want to collaborate. Nowadays, it's pretty common that a couple of people from the same team work remotely on the very same version of a document and stuff like that. So all that changed. And if people work commonly on the same set of data, they want to see all this data combined in the right form in the reports. This is why we talk about today the Microsoft Analytic Platform System. To fulfill these requirements and to bring more reality into vision, into this vision, and to bring one more choice into it, we have created the Analytic Platform System, which is an appliance model. An appliance means it's hardware and software configured, pre-wired. You can order a rack or up to 7 racks, which makes a single database system. And then you can order them from Quanta, HP, and Dell. However, in Europe, Quanta is not widely available because Quanta does not yet have a support organization in Europe. However, in Europe, you usually have HP and Dell. And you can combine that with support. We usually have also a premier mission critical offering about supporting the appliance and everything related to that. So they have a single channel to the support organization. And it's basically a very safe way to do things because it's already built. It's more or less plug and play, and you save time. You don't need to recable everything. It's done already. Just the appliance comes with a Microsoft guy and a hardware guy, which is setting up the thing, which means they are just configuring the things. Well, it needs to be connected to your network, so the IP addresses needs to make fit in everything. So actually, it's pre-wired, pre-built, and you just plug it into your data center. Now, the big question is, what is the difference of this solution from traditional SQL Server? Usually, traditional Microsoft SQL Server runs on a single box. It runs either on an SMP system or on a NUMA system. It's ideal for any kind of workload. You can also use it for OLTP, but also for data warehousing if your data is not very large. And on the other side, the appliance is more or less an MPP system. That means a massive parallel processing system, which has multiple compute nodes and a lot of nodes. Actually, they are computers, machines, which build the whole appliance. Every couple of nodes have dedicated storage, dedicated network. It's all built into a one box. And if you can run data warehouse load tens or probably 100 terabyte on a SMP system, you can, our PDW scales up to 6 petabyte these days. So if you have a database size of 6 petabyte, this is the proper solution for you. I know 6 petabyte is not very much. I have talked to customers who have already about 25 petabyte of data, but these are rare customers. Like right now with our appliance, we have in this area the largest appliance for the largest databases compared to our competitors. And everything is fully integrated, and we also support Hadoop uncompressed data and PDW compressed data. You can see the numbers on the slide. Actually, now, the question is, what do other people think about our solution? I just put on some Gartner magic quadrants, and you can see the left-hand side shows the appliance, and actually Microsoft is on the right top corner, and the right-hand side quadrant shows the business intelligent and analytic platform magic quadrant, where Microsoft is also in the right upper corner. And actually, with the appliance, we moved especially for the appliance model from the center to the right side up, and also in the BI stack from the center to the right hand up side. And every year we move more to the up right front. Up means we are able to execute, right means we have a pretty good vision about what needs to be done and what we need to do. Actually, the sources where these slides come from are mentioned in the bottom. You might not be able to read it, but it's in the slide. So I know at the end of the tech ed, you can pick up the slides. There are references in, you can look them up, and that's up to you if you don't believe that. So it's not made of me, it's coming directly from Gartner. Now, let's see again. These are probably the systems. Actually, the appliances look a little bit different. The front door is not built like that. It's a little bit different, but it just shows it's a box. It's an out here, one enterprise data warehouse appliance offering. It has high scalability from tens to thousands of terabyte. Just imagine 6 petabyte are 6,000 terabyte more or less. It's a high performance through and massive parallel processing system, MPP system. It's a flexibility and choice, actually, you know. Now you can, depending on your workload, you can pick either regular SQL Server or this appliance. It's up to you. This is the choice. And actually, we think it's the most comprehensive solution because it's a complete data warehouse solution spanning desktops, enterprise data warehouse, and data marts. You can use it for everything if you want. It's pretty fast. Later on, I will have a demo showing a little bit about the performance of such an appliance. And to say something in advance, usually when your BI report takes minutes, with that appliance, it takes usually seconds. If it took hours, then we are going to minutes. And sometimes we go even from weeks to hours or minutes, depending how much minutes you want to count. So it really depends on the workload. It's optimized for data warehouse load. What does that mean? It means it's optimized for large scans. I will talk a little bit more in details later on, or in the deep dive session tomorrow lunchtime, which I can highly recommend. That actually is, in a few words, the Microsoft Analytic Platform System. It actually talks about scale out of relational data to petabytes using an MPP system and all that stuff. We are using multiple nodes, dedicated CPU memory and storage, and we use industry standard hardware, which is our building blocks in this appliance, and so we can reach that for relational data. But you can also combine that with a Hadoop section. And we also have an out-of-the-box scale-out non-relational data based on HD Insight, which is the Microsoft version of Hadoop. It creates a Hadoop cluster for data requirements, and it scales out linearly, more or less. And it shuts down the cluster when you are done. So scale-out big data. So this is for non-relational data. This is why we are saying with the appliance you can handle relational data and non-relational data. However, you can also order the appliance only with the relational part or with both parts, so it's up to you. This is also during the ordering process your choice. Actually, that leaves us or comes to the challenges of the modern data warehouse. Of course, we have now seen how the traditional data warehouse was, a couple of building blocks for the modern data warehouse, but this doesn't come for free. This comes with something you need to have in mind. Actually, you want to keep existing legacy investment. You just don't want to move everything to Hadoop. Actually, I just talked a few weeks ago to a banking customer who had the idea to put all the data he has, no matter in which kind of database, it's all the transactional relational data, and just put it into a few files on a Hadoop cluster. Wouldn't be that great? Well, maybe not. But I don't go into the details for that. It just means, you know, you're going from a relational database system to a other system. But what does it give you, you know? The results and experience might not be what some people at the customer side who took the management or in the management decision like to get. So traditional systems usually have the problem that they have limited scalability and ability to handle new data types. Acquire big data solutions, as I said, just do everything on Hadoop is probably also not the best idea because it increases your training costs and increases the data silos significantly. What else that does mean is up to your imaginations. I just indicated a little bit that with my example. And you can buy new tier one hardware appliances. high acquisition and migration costs, or you can acquire business intelligence and tools. It's complex with low adoption, some of them at least. So this is something you have to have in mind when you have the idea to put everything just onto a Hadoop cluster. Well, Hadoop cluster itself, without the additional pieces, it's just a file system. Just imagine 20 years ago, you stored everything in a file system. Soon you found out this is not the greatest idea, so you put everything in a database. Now we are going back to putting everything into a file system, and we have forgotten about the disadvantages of having a pure file system. Some of the disadvantages are covered by some services, but I don't go into these details now because this is not a Hadoop talk. The appliance, it's more or less hardware and software engineered together. Actually, what you see, you have it's at bottom, our HD Insight region. Then we have another layer, which is called Polybase. I have later on a few slides about that. Actually, it's a kind of integration layer. And we have the SQL Server Parallel Data Warehouse, which we usually call PDW region. And the HD Insight piece is called HD Insight region. PDW stands for Parallel Data Warehouse. Questions? Oh, well, okay. So whenever you have a question, please feel free to ask questions. Raise hands, use the microphones, whatever you want. Okay. Oh, there was a question. I was right. Actually, I have two of my colleagues here, Matt Goswell and Lionel, and they will also later on help me answering questions.
Okay. In the start of the presentation, there was a slide showing the different layers to have a full analytics solution. And these slides covers so many different solutions like stream analytics, real-time, dealing with different types of data coming from different sensors, blah, blah, blah. And when it comes to the appliance, it doesn't have all that, so I'm not able to relate the slide we had in the start with what we are discussing right now. I mean, this is not exactly what we have been talking about.
Yeah, actually, you are to some degree right. So first slide was a little bit too simple. I have later on a slide which is more complicated. You probably have different things, or maybe I have understood your question incorrectly. Let me know if this is the case. And of course, from the right hand, the modern data warehouse, I have shown building blocks which you might not need. That's true. So it was one extreme picture to the other extreme picture, just to show the difference. You know, if I show the same amount of boxes in every slide, then people ask, what is the difference? That they say there's a different type of boxes, then it's a story they don't get. If I have three boxes there and 25 boxes there, then yeah, it's different now. So it's, no, the story is not that black and white as I showed you, all right, but it just shows something changed. That was the sentiment of these slides you should get. And as I said, how a BI scenario and landscape can look like, I have another slide later on which is much, much more complicated and which you need to think about 15 minutes to find out what's on this slide. So actually, yeah, you're right. Thank you for that question. And also the appliance doesn't have more than just the three boxes. It's just some ideograms to show what it is. Okay. Microsoft Analytic Platform System, usually we say it's an enterprise-ready big data IoT platform. What does that mean? Hadoop alone is not the answer to all challenges. I've already mentioned that a little bit. Now we have a slide about it, and actually the Hadoop ecosystem is shown on the left-hand side, which is actually a file system. It can use different data sources. It has a MapReduce layer on top to query data and to get results. And it's built into an array of servers. What a lot of people do, they move this HDFS data into a data warehouse before they do some analytics. Because, you know, that means from HDFS, they use an ETL process to get the data into a data warehouse because they want to use T-SQL to query that. T-SQL is something they have created and written for 30 years now. Some DBAs at least, you know, some are younger, I know that. But this is something where most people are very familiar if they are talking about BI and databases. On the other side, writing a MapReduce job means creating Java code. Which T-SQL programmer does know that languages? What was the name? I don't know. Forget it. Most people don't know that. So actually, people do crazy stuff like that, putting all data from Hadoop into a warehouse because they just want to query data. That's a little bit overkill, I would say. So, and actually, we have everything in the appliance, and actually Polybase is the integration layer. And as I said, on Friday morning, 8:30, we have a talk about Polybase where you can get all the details about this particular layer, what it is for, what you can do with it, and why it's better than putting everything into a database, and also better than having everything on a Hadoop file system. And actually, it's a high performance and tuned within the appliance. It's 100% Apache Hadoop compatible. We do not only support the hard inside region built on the appliance with this Polybase layer, we also support Cloudera latest versions, so you can make that connect to a Cloudera cluster if you have that. We use Hortonworks on Linux and on Windows, so we support quite different distributions with this Polybase layer. So you do not need to buy the appliance with the HD Insight region. You can also connect it to your Hadoop cluster if you have one. However, if you don't have one and if you don't want to learn how to build them, you can buy everything in a single box. So that's actually just one of the choices. And it supports, in the appliance, it supports end-user authentication with Active Directory. This is what a lot of customers do want to do. And not every distribution of Hadoop does support that. You can manage and monitor that using our System Center solution. And it's accessible inside everyone with Microsoft BI tools. So it's connecting islands of data with Polybase. Actually, you have either Microsoft Azure, HD Insight, Hortonworks for Windows and Linux, Cloudera. You can also make that communicate with Polybase. And at the end of the day, what you do, you use a select statement against a parallel data warehouse engine. If it's not an internal table, if it is an external table, it calls over the Polybase layer to get the data. It creates a MapReduce jobs on the Hadoop system, returns the results and combines the results to the client, and you can also join data which are on Hadoop with data which you have in your regular table in the relational database. And so, as I said, we support multiple distributions of Hadoop. It provides the ability to query non-Microsoft Hadoop distributions such as Hortonworks and Cloudera, and everything is optimized because usually Hadoop is an MPP system, so appliance is an MPP relational database system, so the nodes talk to each other. And within the appliance, we have two networks of 56 gigabit, so we can pretty fast shuffle data around. So we can really bring the queries to the data and the results back to the client. What is actually the idea of big data? The basic idea of big data is to bring the query to the data, not the data to the query engine. And this is one of the building blocks which does do exactly that. So next generation performance at scale, why do we say that? Well, we also have a couple of slides about that. Actually, we have in the parallel data warehouse relational MPP system, we have something which is called cluster column store index. Some people might have heard that with SQL Server 2014, this thing is also in SQL Server 2014, but we had it in the appliance already since 2012. So this is why we are saying we have our own version of SQL Server in the appliance. Actually, it's a later build than 2012, and we have that for 2 years now. Right now, in the latest version of the appliance, we have, of course, SQL Server 2014. But this is something we thought it's very interesting, especially for data warehouse load. It's a building block of so-called in-memory database engines. And it's the question is, with SQL Server 24, we also had a column store index which was not clustered. It was a non-clustered column store index. And actually, it was read-only data, a copy of the table. But this is changed. A clustered index means it's the table itself. And it's, of course, updatable and everything. So it's like a regular table. It's just much faster. It saves space because the data is not organized row by row. Row by row is what you know from regular SQL Server tables, regular relational engine tables, where you store row by row. It's inverted. It stores column by column. So we have every column in an array of pages. That means when you compress that, all in the page is the same data type. That means it's much more compressible as the row store. And of course, if you don't retrieve all the columns, it only loads the columns, the segments of the columns, which are interesting for the queries. So you can also only bring from the table just a single row into memory. So it's also lower I/O. It is higher compression rate. And therefore, it's much faster, and you can imagine with having everything higher compressed, it's also a much lower footprint in the memory. So if you have a given set of memory, RAM, much more data fits in. So it's more likely that your query come out of the cache as it is with a row store. Do you have a question? No. Oh, I misunderstood. And actually, that means on some of the tables compared to row space, if you look at the space for the table and the space for the indices you usually use, we save up to 91%. That's actually a higher compression rate plus the elimination of non-clustered indices. Usually we don't need clustered indices anymore because what are clustered indices for? They are just to optimize seeks. And I said this engine is built for high performance scans. So having a scan, you should be not afraid in this data warehouse, in this engine, to have a large scan. I will show you a scan later on over about 76 billion rows, and it's just executing fast. We will see that later in the demo. So actually, this is nothing comparable to the row store, nothing comparable, you know, from the old relational database management systems. So this is a pretty new technology. Well, column store technology came up a couple of years ago. I would say it was about 2003, 2004. It was playing in some niche products, and since, I think now for 3 or 4 years, major companies build some capabilities which are column store oriented into their engines. Microsoft filed a patent for this cluster column store index already in 2009. So we do that now for more than 5 years, and now it's showing up in the product. So this is really a solid product. As I said, just imagine you have the columns being organized in segments, and you organize each column is a couple of segments. And actually, that means you can insert data. Inserting means you insert in a delta store, which is shown here. You have also a delta store if you insert something. And you can delete something. So the delete operation is just a logical operation. The physical operation is done on a rebuild. And an update is usually a delete followed by an insert. You can also use a bulk insert. Actually, I just have spotted that on my slides, the number 100,000 is incorrect. The real number is 104,000. So I should have updated that. I forgot about that. So that means a bulk insert with more than 104,000 rows will directly create a permanent store, will not go into the delta store. So the data going in do not need to go through the delta store, through an additional process of getting compressed and everything. Usually, in the regular column store, everything is highly compressed, and in the delta store, stuff is uncompressed. And a backend process does do that cleanup, which is called tuple mover. This is why we have it. This is a tuple mover. It's a backend process which creates the change data and builds them into the final blocks in an asynchronous manner. And usually it does it during a rebuild. You can force it with a rebuild to do that. So that's in short. And a select usually is going against the whole structure depending what data is current. So that's about it. So you see you can do everything which you can do with a regular table. So actually it looks like a regular table from the outside. It feels like a regular table. It's just much faster. So this is something you probably want to have. So going a little bit into the idea of distributed parallel query execution. This is a slide which I could talk probably for 5 hours just to explain the details. This is not a deep dive session, just an overview session, so I just have a single slide about it. Actually, what it does, it's pretty simple. You have a client. You send a query to the control node. The control node is the only interface which is exposed to the outside and which you know with an IP address and which you can use in tools to connect to that thing. This control node actually has two functionalities. It has a management functionality and control functionality. Management means it creates an execution plan and distributes the queries for the compute nodes. And the control function means it also collects the data and builds a final result, which then gets pushed to the client side to answer the query. Well, actually, it's just a nice thing. So actually, it's not so simple. However, this is why it's so fast. You have a single select statement, and then you have a lot of compute nodes. Currently, our offering goes to up to 56 compute nodes. Just nobody ordered an appliance which is larger yet, so we think 56 is something which is good enough for now. However, we know this is not for the next couple of years, so we might increase that in the future as needed. So if you have more than 6 petabyte demand, let me know. Then we can go to our engineering team and say, now we need a little bit more. More data, more nodes. And I also have to mention that within a compute node, we also have 8 distributions, which means 8 slices of your table. So actually with an 8 compute node appliance, you already have 64 slides of your table, which is distributed data, and everything goes in parallel overall. So it's much more parallel than everything else you have seen in a regular SQL Server engine. Now, I said before I have another slide about the distributed data warehouse architecture, and this is the answer to your question. It's a little bit more complicated in reality, and this is also what you can do. Of course, this is a talk about APS. This is because in the center is the APS. You could also put in the center regular SQL Server. You can also put in the center analysis services or whatever you want. The picture would not be much different. Just the naming of the boxes would be different, but that's about it. This is reality. You have a big database system in the center. You get information exchange to other database systems. You use ETL tools. Actually, these days, we don't only use ETL tools. We also use ELT tools. And with the appliance, you go from an ETL process to an ELT process because the T thing is much faster within the appliance, within the database, T for transformation. Before, the idea was you do the transformation outside because you have so much resources, but it's still a single box. So single box, don't scale, is not very performant in these scenarios. So this is why we move the T thing now into the database to make it much more fast. This is true as long as all the data you need for the T is already within the database. Of course, if you need to talk to Active Directory to do some of the lookups for the T, then it's still faster outside, or then you won't see much of a difference because the bottleneck is then the external system. So that's about it. You have data files which you load. You have BI tools, mobile apps. You have SQL query tools going against. You have Office, especially with excellent, also nice BI add-ins. You have Power BI and everything related. You can have third-party database systems whatsoever. This is more a piece of reality. It's also just a single piece which shows more or less the Microsoft technology in the couple of surrounding blocks. But you can whenever you have a solution and you make a picture of the building blocks of the solution, it will look like something like that. Maybe this piece would be much more complicated, the lower piece. But that's more the reality. So this is more how modern data warehouse will look like in the future. The thing here is, it is not just relational data, it's also non-relational data. Actually, I hate the expression non-relational or unstructured data, because for me, there is no notion of unstructured data. Every data has a structure. Even if the thing is, unstructured data is usually the opposite of two-dimensional structured table-oriented data, and therefore it's true. But for me, every data has some structure, otherwise you couldn't do anything with it. Even with a JPEG. What is in a JPEG? Well, it's not just a picture. And some JPEGs are copyright information. You have even the manufacturer of the camera. You know what lenses are used, and everything is in a JPEG these days. And so it's not really unstructured data. It's probably a structure you don't know well, yeah, but it's not unstructured data. But it's just my personal preference. Still have unstructured data on the slide because this is the official term which is used industry-wide, so this is an understood and understandable term. Now, let's do some demo. Now I have to switch, I guess. Okay, now we have a database. You see that here. We have our favorite query tool, which is SQL Server Data Tools, but actually the name of the tool is not interesting, so it's interesting what you can do with that. And you see we just, first of all, we just count how much data I have in this table. I'm now in the database, and I have just about 24 million rows in a table. That is not very much. It's just a small set of data. I usually say this is a tiny or small Excel sheet-like database. And we actually, this is a fact table, and we actually just do some calculation and produce some stuff we can calculate. So actually, now we have just scanned all the 24 million rows and produced a couple of records. It's grouped by product key, and we have the amount of sales data, which is just a few hundred rows, a few thousand rows. Not much. It was pretty fast. It was executing, well, in less than 1 second. I wouldn't say 0 seconds, but less than one. Now, let's do something with the customer key. Same thing, same performance. We just related it to another key. And now we are joining it with the dimension table just to get the name of these customers instead of the ID, because people don't know the IDs of customers. They don't know the name of their customers. Everything is executing pretty fast. Just imagine, we just scanned the table with 24 million rows and join that with a dimensional table, getting some names out. I did some string manipulation to build the names in a single cell, and that was about it, and it's still below 1 second. Now the interesting part is, what does the thing do if we have, let's see, if we filter a little bit, now we filter it. Now, we are not scanning all the table. We are just using a subset of that, and it's very fast, too. So actually, instead of scanning the whole table, we just scanned a little bit. But because we don't have a non-clustered index on it, we actually did more than just these few records. But even so, you can imagine, you know, this is just a couple of Hello World sample queries over a small subset, and it's very fast. If you do the same thing on a regular SQL Server box, you would probably have seen that executing below 1 minute, beside of below 1 second. And so that's about the difference. Now let's go for a little bit larger table. We have also a huge demo, which you might have seen, is cybercrime. And usually, this is used in all our BI presentations these days, just to show the capability of our Power BI stack. However, I'm only interested in the amount of records and the queries behind these reports, which are, in this case, stored in an appliance. And doing account pick actually also was about 1 second, and now we didn't query 24 million, now we queried 76 billion rows. So about 3,000 times larger, and it's still executing in about a second. So this is a beauty, the scalability. If you would do that on a regular SQL Server box, you would probably go for lunch and come 15 minutes later. Maybe just 3 minutes, but it depends on the box, but it just tells you it's a little bit faster than regular SQL Server box. And this is the beauty of the MPP system. It does everything in parallel, highly parallelized. And this is just a small appliance with 8 compute nodes, and we have just about 64 distributions. So just imagine what would happen if you go with 56 nodes instead of 8 nodes. So this is really, and such a full rack 8 node appliance is not something which is uncommon in customer sites. It's pretty common these days. Now, let's do the same thing with this table as we did before. Actually, let's find out what kind of threads are in this database. Actually, this table, this fact table with the 76 billion tables was from actually cyber virus attacks. We have about this. Actually, every record in this table is an individual occurrence of a virus somewhere in the world. And now we find out what kind of threat is behind that. Queries we group by, it's more or less the same, our very similar statement as before. We just do some count, some grouping to find out what will happen. It also is executing very fast. Now we see we just had about 7 different threads. And now we join that with the other table to get the name of the threads. And it also goes somewhere below 2 seconds. So actually, that means going from 24 million rows to 76 billion was just the difference in execution of this type of queries of just a second. I don't know what will happen if you do that on a relational system. You probably wait a little bit longer, right? Whoever puts 76 billion rows in a single table in SQL Server? Probably not many people, I guess. Okay. So this was just showing a little bit about what you can do with the appliance, what it feels like. So actually, until now, I did talk more or less about the marketing side, what you can do that, why you should buy that, which is usually content created by marketing people. Now we have seen some real-life demos showing you that we don't promise stuff, we can do what we promise, so we can execute on that. So this is a solution which is available and which is pretty neat. And right now, these days, we have almost every large BI tool manufacturer you can imagine or is well known actually works all on the support to get APS supported, all already has this support. But if you don't ask for that, they don't tell you that. But most systems or most BI systems which are not from Microsoft already works with APS. So, questions around this demo thing. Okay, after lunch people fall asleep, I know, but I hope it was not too boring. No, no jokes, okay. Okay, that was for me for the introduction and the overview session of APS, the demo. Question? If you want to see a question, please use the microphone. So over here. Unfortunately, we have over here just a microphone. Otherwise, the recording will not get your question, and I would need to repeat that.
I'm just wondering, what drivers, do you have drivers that support Linux?
To Linux. Yes, we have a JDBC driver which you can use on Linux.
So it's.
And that's about it, I guess.
Okay, so it's SQL 11.
But we also have, my colleague just said, we also have an ODBC driver for Linux.
That runs on CentOS. CentOS, so.
CentOS, I don't know. I know that we support Red Hat in Linux, I know that.
Okay.
But this is something, please, after the talk, come to me, I will find out. It's not a problem. Yeah, but if you have a company and want to build such a driver, we can help you out too.
I've got a question about, you said HD Insight. Is it completely comparable to the Azure HD Insight, or where are the differences between Azure and the APS?
Well, it's probably more or less the same distribution. Actually, it's based on our distribution of Hadoop. It's more or less the same thing. It usually in the APS, we are version-wise a little bit behind. We are already with some version 2 in the latest version, or since a half year now. But it could be that usually in Azure, a new version comes up first, and the next build afterwards, we will get that into PDW or into the APS appliance. So from a version perspective, we are a little bit behind. It's still the HD Insight distribution, which is more or less the Microsoft Hadoop distribution, which is more or less the same bits. Only the version number could be slightly different.
Okay, thanks.
And it comes with all the management layer. You don't need to install it. It is pre-installed already. So if you ever have installed a Hadoop cluster with more than one node, you know what I'm talking about. So actually, the APS setup also sets up completely automatically all the Hadoop cluster. You just need to provide an XML file with all the MAC addresses and IP addresses in.
How you create the database which you have shown?
Pardon me?
How you create the database?
Create database?
Yeah.
There. Well, actually, you create the database. You say you have actually to specify three sizes. One is for distributed data. One is for replicated data, because we have distributed tables and replicated tables. Replicated tables are usually for dimensional table. Distributed tables you better use for fact tables, distributed tables. And we have log space. And you can say if you have auto-create statistics on or off. And one more flag, which I forgot. It's actually, compared to regular SQL Server, very, very simple. And of course, you need to specify the database name, but that's about it. All the layout where the data is put is automatically done for you. It actually creates about 10 different file groups, one for log, one for replicated data, and 8 different for distributed data. And it lays out on the disk usually each of... I have not mentioned that actually we have scale units in. A scale unit is usually 2 or 3 compute nodes and a common storage, and you can have multiple of these units. And how should I say that? Actually, in the deep dive talk tomorrow, we have all these details about that piece. And it just uses all the disks in the appliance if you use distributed data, and for replicated data, it also uses almost everything.
So it means it can't be supported in-house?
Pardon me?
It can't be supported in-house?
I didn't understand that.
Okay. Can this system can be supported in-house, or it just need to be supported by Microsoft?
Well, actually, yeah, you are right. You buy the appliance. There are stuff you can do by yourself. You can create a database. You also get all the logins, all the administrators, password, everything. You could do everything by yourself if you want. But if you want to have a support contract, there are certain things you should not do, which is usually done by our support people, like adding a unit, replacing a node, because you need to find out what really went wrong. The system is not that simple. Usually we have 2 Ethernet networks and we have 2 InfiniBand networks. And this alone is not very trivial. Actually, the box has 4 switches minimum built in and stuff like that. So everything is redundant. Whenever a single failure occurs, I have slides about failures later on. So actually this is a pretty much error-proven system. When a single component fails, nothing happens. It still continues to operate. However, of course, if a whole storage or a whole scale unit fails with all the nodes and all the data, then of course it's a different story. Even enterprise quality systems do fail, but not with a single failure. So actually, yeah, you can do some of that work by yourself. Create database is not a problem. You can maintain also SCOM stuff. We have management packs for SCOM. Also monitoring stuff can be completely done by you. We are open to that, so we are not limiting you. But only certain things like adding a unit, replacing a node is something which should be done by our support. They will do it together with the hardware vendor. Because if a computer fails, you need to replug it, rewire it, and everything. And actually, you need to do that in the correct way. So, yes, you can manage that by yourself, but no, you cannot do everything like on a single system. Certain things should be done by our support people. Therefore, we are offering special support contracts for that, just to make it very lightweight, so they can only buy these pieces which you need. And that's about it, yeah. Otherwise, yes, it's a closed system, it's an appliance, but there are certain things you can do. You can also look up everything. Also, administrator passwords are distributed when it's set up, so it's up to you. It's more or less at the end, it's your box. So, thank you for that question. So, changing gears a little bit, I have the last block engineered for optimal value, which actually I think, actually that shows if you think about our competitors, we have a significant lower price per terabyte compared to our competitors, and we have lower storage costs because on this scale unit is already dedicated storage in, and we use Windows Server 2012 or 2012 R2 storage spaces to manage that. So actually it's direct attached storage, therefore it's very fast storage. It's much faster than any Sun you can buy, because usually not the Sun is the problem, it's the link to the Sun. And everything comes built in with storage and everything. Now, introducing the system. Just a recapitulation of what we did. We said it's enterprise-ready big data IoT platform because it can manage relational and non-relational data in a single appliance. It's enterprise-ready Hadoop, and it integrated querying across Hadoop and PDW using T-SQL. It's a direct integration with Microsoft BI tools such as Excel. Actually, in our BI tools, the appliance, you usually specify just a SQL Server source. It's for our BI tools. It's just another version of SQL Server. You use the IP addresses and just another port, and then you can connect and execute queries against it. Then we talked about next generation performance at scale. We talked about near real-time performance using in-memory column store. I explained that a little bit. More details tomorrow in the deep dive session from my colleague. I will be also there to make sure that your questions get answered, even if he can answer it perfectly by himself, but he's just a single person, and if 25 people show up, he can only answer one question at a time. We have talked about the ability to scale out to accommodate growing data and removal of data warehouse bottlenecks with MPP SQL Server. Actually, there is no bottleneck because you can, it's a scale-out solution. Bottleneck means on a single SMP system, you still have not too much bandwidth on a storage connection. You don't have too much bandwidth on a network connection, so this is where you're limiting. And limits come from, it's the first bottlenecks you usually see if you don't see it on the CPU or memory. But with data warehousing, you usually have an IO-bound system, and then you see it usually first in the storage layer, and then if you fix that on the network layer. And that's about it. And we also talked about engineered of optimal value. Well, we said the lowest cost, everything is in a single box, so you don't need to spend weeks to set it up. You just call, buy it, and it gets with some people in which builds it up. And we're using commodity hardware or industry standard hardware building blocks to build that up. So this is not the most expensive SQL Server boxes. These are pretty straight two processor box systems. So it's a mid-range area. And usually in the past we also had the fast track thing. If people ask what's the difference between fast track and this one, both is built for data warehouse. Well, fast track is still a single box. And usually, as a single box, it's even more expensive than the lower versions of this appliance. So yeah, this solution can be even cheaper than a fast-track data warehouse solution. Now, let's talk about what's really built into this box. This is usually some of the building blocks. You see we have some machines on top, which don't have a storage, and some machines on the lower part, which do have JBOD pods, which do have a storage. And actually, this would be one scale unit and another scale unit. A scale unit, in this case, are two of these machines. And JBOD, actually, this is a sample slide showing the hub HB technology. With Dell, you have three compute nodes connected to two storages in a scale unit. So it's a little bit different. And, of course, you have these nodes with no storage connected. And guess what? What runs where? Actually, this is for the PDW region in this example, and this is for the HD Inside region. We use the same building blocks. So whenever you buy that appliance with five scale units for PDW and five for HD Inside, you can later on change it and convert the HD Inside unit to a PDW unit. So it's the same hardware which gets used more or less. Which also makes it the largest boxes for our Hadoop distributions per compute node, even if we have more than one compute node on a single box or data node. And actually, all functionality is done in virtual machines. Actually, that means here you have the compute nodes of the PDW region. Here you have data nodes of your HD Inside region. They are connected to a storage. And you have two compute nodes for the, actually CTL stands for control node, and it's blue because it belongs to the PDW region, talking to these two blue boxes. And all the orange boxes makes the HD Inside functionality. We have a head node, we have a security node, and a management node on the top. And we also have an additional spare node for every of these top box machines. So whenever something fails, you can do a failover to one of the spare nodes. And of course, we have a couple of yellow boxes which are managing the fabric. The Active Directory machines, the Windows Deployment Services, and the Virtual Machine Manager to make certain functionality work, which I will show in the next couple of slides. So that is actually how the smallest appliance with HD Inside and PDW region can look like. So this is the minimum set of machines which you need to have. Of course, you can, as I said, you can have multiple of these boxes and multiple of these boxes, and you can even have more spare nodes if you want to make sure you can do multiple failovers at a time. So let's talk about how this error handling thing does work. Well, or let's first start to talk a little bit about software installed. Actually, now I have just used the blocks which build up the PDW region. So we look at this now region by region. And this is actually the base unit, which means the minimum size unit for a PDW region, two compute nodes, one control node, a couple of fabric management machines, and a spare node. Usually in the control node is installed Windows Server 2012 R2, the PDW engine. A DMS stands for Data Movement Service. This is actually the service which moves data around within the appliance very, very fast. And, of course, we have a regular SQL Server version in, which is actually like the regular SQL Server Enterprise Edition. However, as I said, it's somehow a build between 2012 and 2014 in the older versions, and in the latest version it's 2014. So on the compute nodes, we also have Windows for the operating system, also the data management, data movement service core, and also another SQL Server box. And you can read up all the details. This in the JBOD, we use two files on two LANs per file group, 8 file groups per compute node, and each LAN is configured as RAID 1, and so on. And actually, as I said, I was told you can get these slides later on. It's just for your reference. You are not, should not read all this data right now. It's not to show details. Now, actually, that was too fast. Now let's talk about the same thing with the HD Insight region. Actually, here we have two data nodes per physical machine, and still, these are the largest used data nodes for Hadoop distributions. Usually, people use smaller boxes for a Hadoop data node. But we wanted to use the same hardware component to make sure you can install whatever you want on these units, and you have just one SKU for ordering a scale unit. So actually, it's all the same building blocks. For example, storage has 16 data disks per data node, no RAID 1, just single drives, but in a four-node cluster or above, you have each file copied 3 times. So this is how H2 makes sure it doesn't lose data. Well, it stores every file multiple times and hopes that when it loses some data, that another version is somewhere around. So it's another. It's also redundant, so no problem. And guess what? We have 16 data disks per data node, and on the other side, we also had 16 LANs, RAID 1, and now we have 2 data nodes. That means we have the same amount of LANs, the same amount of spindles, because we use the same base building blocks. This is for the HP example. So, and we have also mentioned what kind of software is installed in a high overview thing. I'm not going into details what is installed in which of these boxes from the Hadoop functionality. That would be deep dive information. Or I'm not sure if he's presenting that or not, but maybe he's mentioning more tomorrow lunchtime. F4 just down the hallway, please. Let's talk a little bit about the failover functionality. Just let's look at the PDW base unit. Just imagine you get a failure. For example, one of these machines fails. And actually, the compute node virtual machine will just fail over and gets restarted on the spare node. Actually, in this case, if the hardware crashes itself, the virtual machine needs to be restarted. If it's another failure, then it does a move to the other. So it really happens. But usually, if you lose the whole box, it needs to be restarted because it doesn't run anymore, you know, if the box itself crashes. So you are up and running, and you can handle your workload again. Questions so far? Yep. Well, yeah, I don't have a slide about that, but I will answer that a little bit later on. I just want to talk about this functionality right now, because I usually expect the question, well, if my compute node is now on the spare node, what happens with my LANs and with my spindles? I would have expected that question, because you cannot use a database engine without LANs, right? But remember, this box is still connected to the JBOD, so it can see the LANs. And all these LANs on a cluster shared, are on cluster shared volumes. And actually, so he can access the files. And as I said, we have 2 InfiniBand networks with 56 gigabit each. And one of them, in this case, will be used to reroute the I/O, the storage I/O from the compute node running on the up on the compute node 2 over the InfiniBand Ethernet network over the HSA 1 node to the JBOD. So it still can get access to the files. Because all of the boxes make a single cluster. And every LAN is a cluster shared volume. That means every LAN is seen from every of these nodes, even if they are not connected. As long as one physical server is connected to the storage, the rest of the machines can see the LANs. And therefore, this is working exactly like that. And remember, we have a second network with 56 gigabit to redistribute the data within the appliance. So actually, this is why we have 2 of these networks, not just for redundancy, but also to make sure, even if a failover happens, that the compute node running on the box without the storage can happily access the storage. So the question which was not answered is now answered in a, was not asked, is now answered in a very fast way. So actually, that is about that. Now, the next question is, you can add a passive unit. As I said, you can use more passive nodes. And if you add a passive node, you have additional capabilities to fail over something. And in case, just imagine the control node fails, you can do a failover. This should just illustrate that you have an additional capabilities of a failover. But don't forget, if the HSA1 machine in that picture will crash now, you have no connection to the storage anymore. And then, of course, the thing, even if it could, in theory, fail over, would not work very happily, you know. So there's some things you need to be aware of in that. So actually, that is what happens if something does fail, to answer very trivial failover functionality within the box. Now, the question is, if you want to replace this failed node, what do you need to do? Actually, you actually replace the box, and then the Windows deployment service will re-image the host system. It will make sure everything gets installed as needed and configured. And then the virtual machine manager will, Now, the failover cluster manager can failover this node back to where it belongs to. Now, I was already one slide ahead. Questions so far? No? Now, talking about add unit, as I said, from 2 to 56 nodes, actually, the hardware vendor does install the boxes, and then, of course, our guys run a special version of the setup, which makes Windows Deployment Service installing the host systems. Virtual Machine Manager will add two more compute nodes, and the setup will also redistribute the data. And all of a sudden, you have a MPP system with four compute nodes. However, the PDW region must have enough space to distribute the largest tables. So actually, to recapitulate what we have seen, you have a minimum of one scale unit for a PDW region only. You have a minimum of these two plus additional boxes as a minimum for PDW plus HDI. You can scale out from one to many boxes, and we scale from about 53 terabyte to 6 petabyte. Actually, this is database size, not the amount of storage we have built in. And scaling out of data to petabyte actually means we just have a lot of these boxes around. You can then extend this thing to get the other data. And you couldn't do that piece by piece, more or less. So the Internet of Things, with Microsoft you can do following. Build on what already works. People know SQL Server. People know their BI stack, so you can still use that knowledge. You can learn on trusted support and expertise. You can unlock innovations like Hadoop to get into a new platform. And this is why we think the Microsoft Analytic Platform System is the perfect backbone for storing IoT data or whatever data you have in your data warehouse, and which is just a little bit larger, and you scaled out your SMP box. We have related content, as I already mentioned, tomorrow lunchtime, deep dive Friday, very early morning, Polybase sessions. I'm still around after this talk to answer the questions. And I already answered quite a few questions, so if somebody else has a question, let me know. Yep.
I just have two basic questions. The first question is, what percent of clients usually buy the Hadoop option? The second question is, what do they actually do with it?
Well, actually, with the Hadoop section, we have very few customers because we only offer that now for, I think, 9 months about that. So actually it takes a while. We have a lot of people being interested in that and a lot of people to test that out. But we have not yet too many customers with a production system on these boxes. And therefore, I don't count these trial things. That's about it. So it's just something which appeared, which is coming up. We have now the third version where we have the Hadoop area built in. So actually, we are pretty, from an engineering perspective, we are pretty far. From a consumption area, well, it's still something which takes time. And that's about it. And actually, now we have the other famous slides, which I have to show. We have BI track resources. You see whatever you have available here on TechEd. You have already resources. You should know that. Otherwise, you can memorize that now in 2 seconds, right? And of course, please use the QR code and do some evaluation form fill-outs for me. And of course, I would like to get good scores. As I said, I'm still out of time. I'm still around, so just come up to the podium or meet me outside for your additional questions. Thank you very much for your attendance, and I hope you enjoy.